This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, what should we expect from the playoff rankings tonight in college football? Plus our Tuesday Top 10. Speaking of college football, which coaches should be the most concerned right now in college football? And in just a few moments, why Monday Night Football should have been frustrating for you if you are a fan of one of the local NFL teams. Get to all that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And you can always join the conversation. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Or give us a call, 843-721-9500. Let me remind you that the 2021 Fan Talk Families campaign is ongoing right now for the 32 families staying at the Ronald McDonald House. And it'll continue until December 10th. Coming up is the 12-hour Radiothon next Thursday, November 18th. Looking forward to that. It's always a great event, something great that Bobby does every year. And if you're able and willing to help, it's, of course, appreciated. So I know they're looking for businesses who could donate any goods or services that could be used as auction items. And you can find the GoFundMe online. You can head over to charlestonsportsradio.com for more information or get in touch with Bobby for any sort of donations or if you want to get involved and help as well, because it's a great cause that Bobby does every year. Last year, even during the pandemic, they raised over $30,000, and they're trying to do an even better job this year. I know they're looking for new refrigerators there for the Ronald McDonald House. So if you're interested in helping and you're able to, head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Get in touch with Bobby. You can find all the information on his social media pages as well as the campaign is ongoing and the Radiothon's coming up next Thursday. It's always a great thing. So last night, Monday Night Football, Steelers-Bears. Actually, again, the NFL, it's like they sold their soul, right? Every primetime game we get, for the most part, have been exciting and have come down to the end. It's not always the best teams. It's not always the best football. But by the fourth quarter, it's coming down to the final play. And last night was the same idea. Got a lot of points in that fourth quarter. Back and forth we went. The Bears were lining up for what would have been a game-winning field goal. And by the way, poor Steve Levy, right, thought it hit off the crossbar. It wasn't even close. That Pittsburgh press box is pretty high up and far. And also, it is just hard. When you're at midfield, it can be hard to judge field goals like that. So I imagine he was watching the monitor, the broadcast, just like you were watching at home. And if you watch it at home, I could see, right, it does kind of look like it hits the crossbar, or you could at least guess that by watching it on TV until you see a replay, or certainly if you were there in person. I think if it was that short, you could see that from the booth, that it landed at the front of the end zone instead of getting to the goalpost. But Steve was probably going off the monitor, and it was a bad angle, and he said, oh, off the crossbar. And, you know, you're watching at home thinking, like, oh, my goodness, they came that close. Then you watch the replay and see that it was, like, 10 yards short on the field goal try. So, you know, not a great last call there, unfortunately. That was a tough situation there for Steve. But Justin Fields, coming off the best performance of his career, I thought played pretty well again last night, especially in the fourth quarter, getting the Bears into that situation to try for the go-ahead or game-winning field goal. Here was Marcus Spears on ESPN's Get Up this morning talking about what stood out to him about Justin Fields' performance last night on Monday Night Football.
What I loved about Justin Fields yesterday, and Greasy and Lou Riddick and Steve talked about it during the game, during the telecast, is that he was not indecisive when it was time to go. He was leaving the pocket when that opportunity presented itself instead of trying to stay in there and prove something. They said that last night. And you could see that start to take an effect on the defense in the secondary. They start paying attention to that, and those deep plays were there. His accuracy, look, that was a great throw on the touchdown, and that's a great throw we showing on the sideline. But that one over the middle to Cole Kmet, that was the throw of the game.
Yeah.
When he fitted that rock in there, I think that's when Justin realized, you know what? I can do what I can do against this defense. It was a phenomenal performance. And guess what, y'all? Guess what? When we were talking about the Bears earlier this year, Justin Fields is coincidentally getting better at quarterback by playing quarterback.
Oh, wow. That's nice. And he's making good decisions. It's almost like he's being coached well. It's weird.
That was the Get Up crew this morning, led there by Marcus Spears, talking about Justin Fields and his performance last night. It's been only the last, you know, only 2 weeks, but he does look to be getting better. He looks to be more comfortable, and that's what you expect from a young quarterback. And I said all along, I don't think he's ready yet, but I've always been consistent ever since draft day that I do think Justin Fields will be a good NFL quarterback. And the reason why I said in the lead-up to this that if you're a Panthers or a Falcons fan, you should have been frustrated watching that last night is because you start to see signs of Justin Fields and what he could be capable of, and then you look at your teams and what you have at the quarterback position. And not only that, but what you could have had, which was Justin Fields. Both the Falcons and the Panthers passed up that opportunity. Now, the Falcons had more of an obligation to Matt Ryan, you know, with the contract. But as they say, right, any good lawyer will tell you every contract is a loophole. And you look at these teams, what the Rams are able to do with the salary cap, how are they continually able to sign these guys? I don't get it. My point being, there's always a workaround, right? Like the cap space, salary cap is just almost like something your parents used to tell you when you were a kid, you know, to try to fool you. You know, tell you about how you, if you didn't brush your teeth, right, some goblin would come get you at night, whatever it is. Right? That's like the salary cap because we always hear about, oh, they don't have any salary cap space, and they go out and these teams sign somebody or they trade somebody or they move this money around. It's like, how do they pull that off? And so my point being, for Matt Ryan, I'm sure the Falcons could figure out some sort of better scenario with Matt Ryan. Or even, while you pay him, you could have Justin Fields on a rookie contract. They chose to go with Kyle Pitts instead. Now, Kyle Pitts, I think, is going to have a great career. But who are the best tight ends of all time? Athlon Sports ranked them. Tony Gonzalez, they ranked as the best tight end of all time. How many Super Bowls did Tony Gonzalez win? None. They put Antonio Gates number 2 on their list. How many Super Bowls did Antonio Gates win? None. Kellen Winslow is a top 5 tight end all time. Hall of Famer. How many Super Bowls did he win? None. All right, Ozzie Newsome. None. So on and so forth. You get my point. Right? Rob Gronkowski is the outlier. You could have a great tight end. Doesn't mean they're going to bring you any Super Bowls. It's like, well, we got a bad team, but at least we got this great tight end now. And Kyle Pitts, it could be more like a wide receiver than a tight end, and he could have a Hall of Fame career. But what would you rather have? Right? A franchise quarterback or a franchise tight end? It's not even a debate. As good of a career as Kyle Pitts is going to have, I'd rather have a quarterback, and we don't know what type of career Justin Fields is going to have. But if you're taking him in the top 5, as would be the case for the Falcons, you're obviously doing so because you believe that he could be that guy. And maybe they didn't, right? But if you're the Falcons, you could have somebody like a Justin Fields as your franchise quarterback moving forward. And the last 2 weeks, he's starting to show some signs of that potential and what he could accomplish over the course of his career. And then you look at the Falcons, right? And you see Matt Ryan. And it's like, oh. It's like if you've been married for a long time, right? And you've been with, for this scenario, let's say you've been with your wife for a number of years and you're a little older in age, right? And then you go, I don't know, you go to the pool or something and you see a beautiful younger woman and it's like, oh, right? You daydream of what it used to be like. And you've been married for over 30 years and you guys are both a little bit older and your glory days have passed you by and, you know, you're not as active as you once were. And you daydream, and if you're a Falcons fan, you look at your roster with Matt Ryan, who, you know, has stone feet in the pocket and is 2 years away from probably, you know, being away from the team or retiring, who knows what, and you look at Justin Fields making plays last night for the Bears, and you look at these other exciting young quarterbacks running around, and you think, like, oh, man, wouldn't it be great if we had something like that? And the Carolina Panthers, no different. See, the Panthers decided to go with the 2-for-1 opportunity. They said, let's bring in Sam Darnold, let's draft J.C. Horn, and we'll have two guys instead of devoting that draft pick to the quarterback, Justin Fields. We would rather have Sam Darnold and J.C. Horn than just Justin Fields. And if Sam Darnold were to work out, it would look like a great idea because now you do have two talented players instead of one. J.C. Horn was playing really well before his injury. But again, I would ask you, right? What would you rather have, a franchise quarterback or like a franchise cornerback? Right? Darrelle Revis was great, but Tom Brady was more important, or any of the teams that Darrelle Revis ever played on in his career. Right? Even like Deion Sanders was great. Okay, give me Troy Aikman and the offense that the Cowboys had in the 90s. Right? I'd rather have the quarterback. And if Justin Fields proves to be that guy, you're going to regret not taking him in that spot, much like the Falcons as well, because we know the quarterback position is most important. The Athletic ranked offenses here at the midway point of the NFL season, and they put the Atlanta Falcons as the number 22 offense, and they put the Panthers at number 30, only ahead of the Texans and the Lions. That's where Carolina is right now. Based off of EPA per drive, which is a metric, and it's one of the more popular metrics, and we need to get into the weeds. Just take my word for it. But the Panthers are 31st in that statistic, meaning that they have actually the second worst offense. Sam Darnold has as many interceptions already this year as he had last year. His percentage, his interception rate is the highest in his career. The Panthers have the second worst turnover EPA, only behind the Chiefs, who have really turned it over this year. The offensive line is ranked 29th, which is fourth worst in pass block win rate. Right? But maybe if you have a more athletic quarterback, you can make up for those things. All this data is to say the Panthers this year have played as a bottom three offense. The Falcons, they've been about a bottom 10 offense with Matt Ryan. And then you watch that game last night and see Justin Fields and you think, like, man, he could have been on our team. And maybe he wouldn't be much better than Sam Darnold this year. Maybe he wouldn't be much better or better at all than Matt Ryan this year. But long term, you look at the Panthers, they still have questions about their quarterback long-term. The Falcons still have questions about their quarterback long-term. You may have Matt Ryan for the next year or two, but then what? You still have to figure it out. And this draft class is not good for quarterbacks for either one of those teams, Panthers, Falcons. So it's still kind of back to the drawing board. Meanwhile, you could have had Justin Fields. You passed on him. And anytime he goes out there and plays well, for every good year Justin Fields has, if he turns out to have a great career, right, as a Panthers fan, a Falcons fan, or the executives that made the decisions, you're going to be kicking yourself. Like, man, that could have been ours. We passed up on that opportunity. Meanwhile, here is Matt Rhule talking about Sam Darnold and his quarterback. You could have had Justin Fields, who maybe isn't great right now. I'm not telling you Justin Fields was, you know, prolific last night, some top 10 quarterback, but at least it provides hope. The Bears are not going to make the playoffs this year, but at least you say, you know what? We could have the guy, and that's exciting. Then you look at the Panthers and you think, we don't have the guy. We have to figure out our quarterback. And here's your head coach. Here's what he has to say. Doesn't sound all that excited when he's talking about the current quarterback of the Panthers.
You know, I think right now we're focused on obviously him and his health. You know, those of us at the game yesterday and watched it and all that. I mean, you know, we know, I think Stan will be the first to tell you, you know, that wasn't good enough from the quarterback position. You know, we had guys open with some opportunities that we weren't able to connect on. You know, too many batted balls. That can't happen at this level. And then obviously three giveaways. I think when you look at our season, when we've protected the football, we've had a chance to win. And when we've given the ball away multiple times, obviously we all know the result. So the play at that position has to be better. Obviously when you're the quarterback, you're depending on everybody else around you. I thought Sam played an excellent game last week against Atlanta. But yesterday was obviously not the best. And, you know, he's a tough guy. He went out there and competed for his team, you know, coming off missing some time during the week. Nothing's ever on just one guy. But the play has to be better. So in terms of, you know, where we are moving forward and all those different things, you know, we'll obviously always try to do whatever it takes to be great. I'm not going to get into hypotheticals and all those things. I just kind of handle things one bit at a time, see where Sam's health is. And then make the best decisions after that.
Matt Rhule talking about Sam Darnold. You know, if you're going to have a bad quarterback or have a losing record, at least have something to be excited about. Like if Justin Fields and Sam Darnold are both going to play poorly, at least you're more excited about what Fields can bring down the road instead of Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold's playing terrible right now, and is there any excitement like, well, you know, he could still get better? Where for Justin Fields, if he struggles, you can at least hang your hat on, like, well, he's probably going to get better. He's a young kid. So if you're going to be bad, you at least want to be exciting and bad. You at least want to have hope for the future when things are bad, instead of being bad and having no hope for the future. The Panthers, their quarterback of the future is not on the roster. Falcons quarterback of the future, not on the roster. And by the way, for Matt Rhule and also Shane Beamer was able to do the same thing, it has to be a coach's dream when you have some sort of injury speculation at the quarterback spot, because these coaches hate to give anything to the media or the other team or the public, and they never want to say, like, oh, yeah, we're going to start this guy or we're going to start that guy. So it has got to be the dream scenario when they can fall back on an injury, right? When Shane Beamer can say, like, well, we have to see about Zeb Nolan and his health first before we make a determination. And Matt Rhule can say, well, we got to wait on Sam's health, make sure he can play first before we make that decision. Right? Perfect stall tactic. Buys you time. You don't have to say whether you're going to stick with him as your quarterback or not. You can fall back on this whole, well, we got to get guys healthy first before we can make that decision. You know. You know what your decision would be if they're depending on, you know, if they're healthy, if they're not healthy, and who you like right now and how you feel about your quarterback. But it's the easy cop-out for these coaches. Man, we got to get everybody healthy first. That's got to be like a dream for them when they can go up there and say, offer that up when asked about their quarterbacks. When we come back, what will the college football playoff rankings? That's a mouthful. What will the playoff rankings in college football look like tonight? Second edition comes out this evening. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
The Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. What should we expect tonight from the latest rankings for the college football playoff? Also have the Citadel in Pittsburgh tipping off tonight at 7 o'clock. Coverage starts at 6:30 over on the city. So, with the Citadel in Pittsburgh, we're hanging out in Pittsburgh today too. We're the little Pittsburgh Pirates. We are family team. From 1979, we had Dave Parker on the show from that team and talked about that team. So I'll have to go check out Dave. Say hello to friend of the show during my time in Pittsburgh. Back when the Pirates were on the top of the baseball world.
Must have been a good time to be in Pittsburgh because the Pirates won the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, the Steelers would go on to repeat as Super Bowl champions.
That's true.
And actually be the first team. They had just become the first team to win three and would go on to win a fourth.
Yeah, that's true. That was probably the best time from a sports perspective. The Steelers were the dynasty, and the Pirates were actually good. Pirates have been lousy for a decade. The Steelers are still, of course, competitive, but they haven't won a Super Bowl in some time. By the way, the first drive-in gas station was built in Pittsburgh in 1913. So there you go. Also, the first radio, the first like commercial radio station, the first radio broadcast was from Pittsburgh. I think it was 1921. So perfect. That's why we're on the radio today. Pittsburgh's got all sorts of things. The polio vaccine was created at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in the 50s. They got all sorts of stuff going on in Pittsburgh.
Oh, the Salk vaccine,
yeah,
as it's known.
That's right. Dr. Jonas Salk worked at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center when he came up with that. I don't have enough time in Pittsburgh to discover all this. Also, speaking of those championships, Pittsburgh ranks second in all-time championships list, even without a professional basketball team. So thank you to the Steelers. That's pretty good there. All right, we get the college football rankings coming out tonight for the second week. You had Michigan State lose. You had some close wins for Alabama. And for Alabama, it's for Cincinnati as well. And also for Oregon. That was the team I was trying to think of. For Oregon as well, some close wins. How is the committee going to react when they put the rankings together this evening? As I said off the top today, the drama that's removed, there is no drama around the number one spot. We know that's Georgia. The question is, what will things look like after Georgia? Well, Heather Dinich was on ESPN SportsCenter, and she offered up what she believes is going to happen tonight with the playoff rankings. Here is Heather. Oh, let's grab Heather in just a moment.
It would not surprise me if the selection committee bumped them up as high as number two this week. I think that people have to at least consider that possibility. I would expect it to be a debate in that committee meeting room because Oregon played well on the road against Washington in dreadful weather, while Alabama, meanwhile, was really struggling against LSU. I'm still trying to realize the fact that Alabama had 6 rushing yards total on the ground. So it wouldn't surprise me if Alabama drops. I think they dropped to the 3 or 4 spot. If I had to project it right now, I would say the committee debates with Oregon number 2, Alabama 3, Ohio State 4, Cincinnati 5.
That was Heather Dinich. I actually disagree. I don't think there's going to be very much movement at all tonight. Georgia's obviously going to be the number 1 team. I still think Alabama will be number 2. Because you look at the teams that were next on the list, Michigan State has now lost. So after Georgia, the top teams that didn't lose this weekend, you had Alabama win ugly. Oregon won ugly as well against Washington. And then again, you go to Cincinnati, and they won ugly. So I don't think any one of those teams stands out like, ooh, that was a really good win compared to the rest. I think you keep Alabama still at number 2. I wouldn't drop them. If you were already putting them at number 2 just because they won, you know, by only 6 against LSU, and no, they didn't play well and didn't look good, but I didn't watch that game and think like, oh, got to get them out of there. I don't think the committee will drop them. She said potentially 4th. I don't think you drop them 2 spots for winning by only 6. I don't think it happens. And I don't think you move Oregon up from the 4th spot to number 2 for beating a bad Washington team by, you know, they beat them by 10. And I mean, they didn't play all that great either. That was a game into the 4th quarter against Washington. I was not impressed with any of the wins. Cincinnati was not impressed with their victory. So when all things are equal, to me, that's when it remains the same, right? Nothing changed to me. All 3 teams had ugly wins, so I would just keep them where they are. Michigan State is obviously going to drop back after their loss, and so Michigan State would drop out the way I would order it if I was in charge. Georgia remains number 1. Alabama remains number 2. I would just move Oregon up to number 3. I would drop Michigan State out of the top 4, but I think Michigan State could still be ahead of Cincinnati. As crazy as that may sound, I just don't think the committee is very high on Cincinnati. And we have Dave Bartu on the show last week who, you know, gets into the metrics and what they actually look at, and he's one of the best at predicting. And, you know, he reiterated the same thing, that Cincinnati just does not – they don't check any of the boxes. They don't have the resume. And he, as he said, there's really not much of a chance that they would ever get into the top 4. So I don't think a win, even though Michigan State lost, right? I mean, we still have teams with a loss that's ranked ahead of Alabama. I don't think Michigan State, even with that loss, I don't know if they fall behind a Cincinnati. I mean, Cincinnati took a goal line stand to beat a 3-6 team on Saturday in the final minutes of that game. They did not play well at all, and they haven't played well the last 3 weeks. So I think Cincinnati stays where they are, and really the only movement is that you just move Michigan State back, and then you move everybody else up a spot. And I think that's all for the top 6 teams. That's all, you know, the focus is on. Wake Forest, obviously, you cross them off. They'll be outside of the top 10. You don't worry about them anymore. But otherwise, I just drop back Michigan State probably to 5th, right ahead of Cincinnati, and then I move Oregon up to 3, Ohio State up to 4, and there you go. Those would be my playoff rankings. I don't think that enough happened this past weekend to come up with these big-time changes. Did we get some big developments in football, in college football on Saturday? Because I don't think so. Alabama struggled, but so too did Oregon. So too did Cincinnati. The only big thing is Michigan State lost, so I moved them out of the top 4. And that's about it. And I don't think a whole lot changes. But we'll see when they release the rankings tonight. I think they're doing it during halftime of the basketball game. We'll see what they get, and then we'll react to it tomorrow. But for Cincinnati, right, I mean, Michigan State loses. Now Ohio State has to play Purdue this week, who's been the giant slayer. What do they call them? The spoiler makers? I love that. The Purdue spoiler makers. So now if you're Cincinnati, you got to take care of your business. You got to start playing better. Because Michigan State just lost. I mean, you hope that Purdue can help you out once again this weekend. Ohio State and Michigan State still have to play one another. Oregon, Heather Dinich said there that Oregon may be the number 2 team. ESPN's FPI still gives Oregon just a 4% chance of actually making the playoff. So that's not very good. So you count on Oregon slipping up as well. Alabama didn't look great this past weekend. For Cincinnati, everything is there, you know, for the taking almost. Now, they may not be given an actual opportunity. But if you go out and you take care of your business and you start blowing out some teams, I mean, you're getting all the help that you need from these other teams. We're talking about potentially having a two-loss team in the playoff this year for the first time. So for Cincinnati, you're getting the help you need. You just got to go do your part. But when the rankings come out tonight, I would guess, this is just my guess, Cincinnati stays where they are, Georgia and Alabama stay where they are. And I'm just dropping Michigan State because they lost. I would put them probably from third to fifth, even though Purdue's unranked, right? But I'm still dropping them back to probably fifth, I would. Leave Cincinnati where they are and just move Oregon and Ohio State up. That's how I would do it. What will the committee do? We'll find out tonight, and then we'll react on the show tomorrow. When we come back, speaking of college football, our Tuesday top 10. Better late than never. 10 coaches in college football who need to be a little worried. And one of them just got the old vote of confidence yesterday, too. That's potentially a bad sign. 10 coaches in college football that need to be a little concerned. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the 10 college football coaches with the most on the line here in the next few weeks or months here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Songs always remind me of certain movies, TV shows, entertainment. And this was used in Ricky Bobby, Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell. Which is also, by the way, I don't care what you say. This is also a great song. I enjoy this song. Get to our Tuesday Top 10 coming up in a little bit. If you ever miss anything in the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. And allow me to remind you once again that the basketball season tips off actually in 30 minutes. And we have Clemson tonight, 7 o'clock. The Gamecocks at 7 o'clock. You can hear that here on our various stations. But most importantly, the Citadel. Tipping off tonight, 7 o'clock. Coverage begins at 6:30 over on the city as they take on Pittsburgh. And also, while we're on the subject, the Citadel's first home game is Friday, and it's a noon tip-off. So we won't have the Morrow Midday Show here on Friday, but instead we'll actually have the Citadel basketball game for you. So Friday, if you miss my voice at this time so much, don't worry. You can still hear me in a different role, but here we will have the Citadel game here on ESPN Radio Friday instead of the Morrow Midday Show because it's going on at the same time. So, you know, instead of doing one thing, I just do the other thing at the same time. So we'll have that coming up Friday at noon, Citadel basketball. So keep that in mind for your programming for the end of the week. So we won't have our typical football Friday this week because of that. So we'll try to jam in all that stuff probably Thursday. You know, I'll give you my picks on Thursday probably, and the games, the most interesting games of the weekend. And we'll try to do our opponent's scouting report here over the next couple of days. So keep that in mind, programming note for the week. We won't have our standard football Friday. We'll try to do a bunch of that stuff in the next couple of days. And on Friday, we will have Citadel basketball instead here on the station for a noon tip-off Friday. A little Friday matinee for the Citadel as they begin their home schedule Friday. College basketball begins today, so looking forward to that. I'll give you the Tuesday top 10 in just a moment here. 10 coaches that for one reason or another have the most on the line. They need to be a little careful. Maybe a little stressed out right now as we finish up this college football season and head into the offseason. We'll do that in a moment. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's first go to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing all right. I got to give you a little tidbits on Pittsburgh. I lived there for 4 years.
Oh, yeah.
4 of the best years of my life, I'll tell you that. When the steel mills all closed down, it cleaned up the air so much.
Uh-huh.
And then they have the colors of the rainbow you follow on the roads in some areas. Really neat effect to some of the rural areas. And I coached baseball at Hampton High School in Gibsonia back there. Part-time it was the way they did it because I also worked a full-time job. But the best thing you have to do there is, number one, you always had to go to a Duquesne or a Pitt basketball game. You had to go see the Pirates, of course. You had to go see the Steelers. It was unbelievable. One for the thumb. And the sandwich you described is the best. And an Iron City Light. That's what you have to have. You go down and then he likes the old village area and you have it. And the other thing used to be, there used to be a guy on the radio called Froggy. And he would do a remote down at the old train station in downtown Pittsburgh. One of the greatest things there. And the other thing is you got to go up the side of Mount Washington. Take a ride on the tram going up the side of Mount Washington. One of the best cities, a sleeper, all the rivers coming together, the atmosphere. It is a great, great city.
What about, are they known for their pizza? Is the pizza good in Pittsburgh?
No, not as good as Chicago. There's no pizza in the world as good as Chicago,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, even a thin pizza in Chicago, and, of course, the stuffed pizza. You just can't replace it. But they, food-wise, even there's something there called Scrapple, which people don't know much about was good, with eggs in the morning.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some good, just a great city. And, you know, seeing me, you know, I haven't missed many meals in my lifetime, so I know a lot about the food. And Pittsburgh, it's just a fantastic city. Can't say more. But then again, we live in the most beautiful city. We don't fight the snow. Snows there, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over.
Yeah.
Because of the mountains and everything else. So at least, you know, let's say, 9 months a year, it's a good city.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the insights, Jim. I'm sure that right now the weather is, let me just look it up. 69 degrees, it says right now in Pittsburgh. 69 degrees, winds at 9 miles per hour, so not too bad. About the same as it is here. Tonight, it's supposed to get down into overnight, you know, about 50 degrees, so about the same here. So, okay, weather's not too different. I thought, at least it's going to be cold. I wish I was there. I've been to Pittsburgh once. I think we did do the tram ride at the time. This is going back about 10, 12 years, so it's been a while. But I did like the city. Pittsburgh has a bad rap for those, you know, outside of Pittsburgh. But I thought it was pretty nice. Went to the Pirates. Beautiful stadium there on the water. You got the bridge. You can walk over to the ballpark. It's cool. All the bridges there. And, yeah, you know, I like Pittsburgh. I wish I was there right now. And the food's making me real hungry. Going to have to try to go find one of those sandwiches around here or some of that Pittsburgh-style pizza and get ready for the Citadel in Pittsburgh tonight as if I was actually there in Pittsburgh, if only. Every Tuesday on the show, we do a top 10 list. 10 coaches in college football that need to be on high alert here the rest of this season and maybe even into the offseason. I got 10 of them. And for some of them, for different reasons, but we do a top 10 list every Tuesday on the show. Let's get to our Tuesday top 10.
Time for the Tuesday top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Most of these coaches are on the list because their seat is getting a little warm. Beginning with the first coach, number 10 on the list, and I did put these in order. Of the ones who are kind of under the most pressure or stress right now, or maybe even need to be looking over their shoulder a little bit. Number 10 is Rod Carey. He's the coach at Temple. You know, I put him at number 10 because it is Temple. We're not talking about the Power 5. But he took over a program that was in pretty good spot. He won 8 games year one, you know, but you always have that idea that, well, those are the previous coach's guys. And since then, he's gone 4-12, won 1 game last year, only 3 games this year. He's won a third of his games in the conference. It's year 3. Year 3 is when you got to show me something as a coach. Long story short, you probably don't care about Temple football, but I put Rod Carey number 10. I think he's on real thin ice there at Temple, as I tried to come up with coaches who are on thin ice. Number 9, I put Manny Diaz. I only put him at number 9 because I think he has bought himself some time. In fact, probably another year, especially depending on how the rest of the season plays out. We had reports that if they lost going back 2 weeks ago, that was going to be it. Instead, they've beaten back-to-back ranked opponents for the first time. That was 3 weeks ago, actually. Back-to-back ranked opponents for the first time in 5 years, and they're playing better football now. They seem to have a better quarterback than even De'Ara King, so maybe have that position figured out for the time being. I think Manny Diaz bought himself a little time, but look, if things go sideways here over these next couple of weeks, I'm sure they could quickly change their mind and go back to where they were on him a couple of weeks ago. He has underachieved, but he's kind of doing the old Jason Garrett right now, where you do just enough to save your job. You don't do enough to meet expectations, but you do just enough where they can't get rid of you. They've won three straight games now, and they have Florida State coming up this week. And then you get Duke to end the year. Right? There's some winnable games there. You got to beat Florida State. That looks good for the rivalry. You get Virginia Tech. That's, you know, another rivalry for them. So depending on how this season goes, I think Manny Diaz could be saved. But that's why I only put him at number 9 on the list. He's always on the hot seat, but I think he's saving his job right now. Number 8, I go with Harbaugh. Now, I don't think Michigan would fire Harbaugh at the end of the year, but Harbaugh, this is a real prove-it year. He had to take a salary cut. A lot of people wanted him out of that job last year. He comes out. Michigan gets off to that great start this season. They're 7-0, but then they lose to Michigan State, and we've talked a lot about this in recent weeks about Harbaugh and his struggles against the rivals. Well, you just lost to Michigan State, so I put him on this list because while I think his job is safe, I want to see how you do against Ohio State. If you lose to Ohio State, they may be your only two losses of the year. But still, that dampens what would be otherwise a very good year, right? Going like 10-2 and playing in a good bowl game. But the two losses being Michigan State and Ohio State, you still can't beat those teams. So for Harbaugh, as good of a year as he may have, I don't think it means very much if you can't beat those teams. So I'm very curious to see how Michigan does against Ohio State coming up here in a couple of weeks. For those reasons, I put Harbaugh at number 8. I put him on the list, but only number 8 because I think his job is safe, but it's more about the reputation, especially if you lose again to Ohio State. Number 7, I put Scott Frost. Now, Nebraska just announced yesterday Frost is going to come back for next year, but they also altered the contract. They lowered his buyout. I think he also took a pay cut. So it's one of those, you know, we're going to keep you around, but we're going to make some changes. And they also did with the coaching staff. A lot of people interpreted that the wrong way yesterday, where they announced the contract for Scott Frost or announced he's going to be back next year, and then about a half hour later, the entire offensive staff essentially got fired at Nebraska. And a lot of people thought, like, oh, Scott, right, he gets this contract, and now he's firing everybody once he made sure he was safe. That's not what happened. What happens in these situations is that the AD came to Scott and said, we're either going to fire all of you or we'll keep you, but you're going to have to make some serious changes. Now, you may be upset at him for agreeing to that and throwing his assistants under the bus, but I think most coaches, most people would do that. If your boss came to you today and said, hey, we're either going to fire you and your whole department, or we're going to keep you and replace the rest of your department, right? What would you choose? Sorry to your coworkers, even if you love them, like, yeah, I'd rather have a job than go, you know, than take a stand with my coworkers. You know, I'd rather kind of just like swallow my pride and, yeah, please keep me around and make some changes around me. Anyways, that's what happened with Scott Frost. They said, we'll keep you around, but you're going to have to make some changes. And he agreed to it. And he said, sure, yes, please keep me here. We'll make some changes on the coaching staff. And that's what happened. But with that said, it shows that, A, the ice is a little thin, but also, B, that's kind of the kiss of death. When they put out a statement yesterday like they did and said, yep, Scott Frost will be back next year, usually that means you're going to be fired like a year from now, right? Whenever we get those the dreaded vote of confidence, usually means you're safe for now, but your time's coming pretty soon. And so for Scott Frost, he's not going to get fired this offseason. They just announced he's coming back next year. But he'll be coaching for his job next year. And so he better, you know, start winning some of these close games for Nebraska. Number 6 on the list is Chip Kelly. He got off to this great start at UCLA, and then things have kind of faded here in the second half of the year. And recruiting has not been good. You know, Chip Kelly had an opportunity when they hired Dan Mullen. He had an opportunity to go to Florida. He was in the running, and he chose UCLA. He'd rather have gone to UCLA than Florida. And the idea was he could hide a little more at UCLA because he's not into recruiting. You don't want to have to go to Florida and compete with these SEC schools and also the other schools in Florida, right? Dan Mullen's getting ripped right now because his recruiting isn't good enough, and he's got like a top 20 recruiting class. Chip Kelly wanted to go to UCLA because, you know, recruiting, it's the Pac-12, it's California. There's not as much publicity or focus on that. But his recruiting hasn't been very good. And after UCLA got off to a big start this year, you know, now they're 500. I mean, they've faded. They've won. They've lost three of their last five games. They just got blown out against Utah. So Chip Kelly, a little bit on the hot seat after a good start to his season. Number 5 on the list, Justin Fuente, always on the hot seat at Virginia Tech. And they started off the year with that win at home against UNC, which was a big upset. Turns out UNC not quite the same team that we thought they were going to be this year. But otherwise, Virginia Tech has not been the same team at home. You lost that home field advantage. Lane Stadium used to be such a tough place to go when Frank Beamer was there. And he had such a competitive advantage. And the record, Virginia Tech's record at home, and especially against ranked teams at home, was so good. That's not the case anymore, right? They lost to Notre Dame, a ranked team there at home. They lost to Pittsburgh by 21 at home. They lost to Syracuse at home. He's lost that home field advantage, and then he's also lost a bunch of games. He's under 500 again this season. They started 2-0. They beat UNC. You thought, okay, maybe this year would be different. And now they've lost five of their last seven. They've lost three out of their last four in the conference. And Fuente has been pretty much 500 at Virginia Tech. We'll see if it's time for a change. Number four on the list is David Shaw. I touched on this earlier with Stanford. In Shaw's defense, it's a tough job at Stanford when it comes to recruiting, and it was made even tougher this year with the COVID extra year of eligibility rule and a team like Stanford unable to take advantage. But also, you know, the shine is kind of worn off of Shaw and Stanford. He took over for Harbaugh, and you may not like Harbaugh, but he did a great job building up that program, and then Shaw just picked up where he left off. And then give it a few years, and, you know, things haven't quite been the same. Stanford most likely will have a losing season this year, probably will finish in last place. They haven't been to a bowl game in 4 years. And again, it's not the easiest job, and you shouldn't expect them to go win national championships. But from where this program was when Shaw took over a decade ago to where it is now, it's gone in the wrong direction. It's probably time to make some sort of change. They just got blown out this weekend. It's a bad team. They've gone in the wrong way. He's been there for a decade, right? At this point, it's kind of like enough is enough. You've been here long enough. We're not really accomplishing what we want. David Shaw, I think, is on the hot seat. He's number four. Number three is Jimmy Lake, coach of Washington. He's had a bad week. He put his foot in his mouth at the podium last week. He hit a player at the game Saturday, got suspended. They lost to Oregon in an important game. He's only 500 in the 2 years. I don't know if you move on from a coach after just 2 years, but remember, Chris Peterson retired. Jimmy Lake was the defensive coordinator, and they just made him the head coach. It's almost like an interim situation. It wasn't like they had an actual search and they were, you know, brought somebody else in. He was the DC. He took over, and Chris Peterson stepped away. So I think you have less time when that's the scenario. I think you're given less of the benefit of the doubt because you're just kind of filling a spot instead of actually having a search, interviewing guys, going and seeing, and like, oh, yeah, you know what? This is the best candidate out there. Now, Jimmy Lake was kind of the closest. He was kind of the most convenient candidate for you. I don't think they move on from him after 2 weeks, though. But things are not going well. Recruiting has tanked. They just fired their offensive coordinator. They're 500 in his 2 years after the job Chris Peterson did. Now he's suspended. All right, and things are snowballing quickly on Jimmy Lake at Washington. The top two coaches with the most eyes on them the rest of the way here in college football. Number two, this is where I cheat the system a little bit. I put Kirby Smart. Not because of his job. Most of these guys are on this list because of job security. That's obviously not the case for Kirby Smart. But he's number two because it's pretty obvious with Georgia. They haven't won in 40 years. They're trying to finally win that national championship. Kirby Smart has come up small in some of the biggest moments. And I've already laid out my reasons to support Georgia this afternoon, that they are clearly the number one team, and there seems to be a pretty sizable gap between them and everybody else. We're worrying, wondering, figuring out who's the second best, who's the third best. We know Georgia's number one, and that's been clear for about a month, and maybe more. This is the year if you are Georgia. Just like this seemed to be the year that things were going to break for Cincinnati to make the playoff, this also seems to be the year where things are breaking for Georgia to finally get over that hump. And you know all the pressure is going to be on Kirby Smart once we get to the SEC championship or the playoff for Georgia to finish this thing off. So for those reasons, I put him at number two. He doesn't have to worry about his job. He has to worry about finishing this thing off and winning a national championship. Which takes me to number one, which is pretty obvious, but I do say Dan Mullen. I think Mullen is on thin ice. I do think he'll be back next year, but what a disaster this season has been for him and Florida. He just had to fire his defensive coordinator, and much like Jimmy Lake at Washington, firing his OC and Scott Frost at Nebraska, it is not a good sign for you as a head coach when you're forced to get rid of assistants, because eventually you run out of assistants to fire and you're next, right? So this is the start of it for Jimmy Lake, for Scott Frost, and for Dan Mullen. Eventually, it's, you know, the buck is, whatever that saying is, it's gonna stop or start with you, whatever the expression is. You're gonna go long enough on that line that you're eventually gonna reach the head coach. First you blame maybe the players, then you blame the defensive coordinator, then this guy. Eventually there's no one else left to blame other than the head coach. You know, so when you see these coordinators get fired, it's kind of the start of the end. Dan Mullen needs to turn things around. I believe he'll be given next year to do so. But if things continue the way they have the past about 8 months, he won't last long there at Florida heading into next season. And there you go. The 10 coaches that have the most eyes, pressure, stress on them the rest of this season and into the offseason. Coaches that are on the hot seat, that have something to prove, or like Kirby Smart, need to go win a national championship. We'll wrap up your Tuesday when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Yeah. What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Upon a funky finish here Tuesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. Podcasts also available online and through our free app, which allows me to tell you that you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Simply stream us online, charlestonsportsradio.com, through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or also our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And while you're there, you can listen to the podcast available through the app or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 9 different states and multiple countries on this Tuesday afternoon. Got to plenty, as we always do, and just when it feels like you've done enough talking, well, I got Citadel basketball coming up tonight against Pittsburgh. 6:30 tip, or I should say 7 o'clock tip-off, 6:30 coverage will tip off over at the City, our sister station. And you can listen to that online, on your phone, smart speaker, whatever it may be, from anywhere in the world or locally here on 102.1 FM. The Citadel against Pittsburgh tonight, just a 9-point underdog on the road against an ACC team. Let's hope we get an interesting, intriguing game and maybe even a Citadel win to begin. That would be great. Clemson and South Carolina also tip things off as well today. College basketball officially begins in about 8 minutes. Games start at the top of the hour. They no longer do that 24-hour thing, the 24-hour tip-off on ESPN, but they are tipping off at 3. Games will be going on from 3 p.m. to midnight. So if you're a college basketball guy, right, this is like Christmas morning for you. College basketball is back. Clemson and South Carolina have some easy in-state games tonight. But pressure, you know, both those coaches. Now, Brad Brunell bought himself a little time because they did make the tournament last year. But before that, Clemson, Brunell was kind of seen as underachieving. And similar for Frank Martin, the stat I've mentioned a couple of times today is he's the first coach in the SEC in 50 years to get a 10th season despite having fewer than 2 tournament appearances with the Gamecocks. So, you know, he's kind of on borrowed time. And I like Frank a lot, and I like that hire when they brought him in, and we've had him on the show. But you got to start making the tournament. I mean, once in 10 years is certainly is not good enough, especially when they're taking 68 teams, and the SEC is putting in a record high number of teams in recent years. You got to be one of them. And so it all begins tonight with the college basketball season and Coach K's farewell tour, and we'll see what the college basketball season brings. But it starts in a few minutes. And then we have the Citadel tonight against Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh picked to finish second to last in the conference, only returning one starter from a year ago, and he's now out. They're down 2 projected starters already to this year's team. In fact, I think 3, 1 suspended, 1's out for the year, another one still working his way back from a knee injury. So, you know, this is when you want to get Pittsburgh. They're a banged-up team. And we caught up with Patrick Stevens from the Washington Post earlier to cover all sorts of things college basketball. You can find that conversation on demand. Patrick was excellent breaking it all down. We also get the college football playoff rankings tonight. And I'll give you any takeaways or reactions to that on the show tomorrow. Let's hope we come in tomorrow celebrating a big Citadel upset victory against Pittsburgh. Wouldn't that be nice as college basketball begins here tonight? Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio. We'll